is Hockey Central at Noon on Toronto Sports Radio, The Fan 590, Rogers Sportsnet, and Sirius Channel 97.
Conference finals are underway, so we kick off a Monday in reflection of Game 1 between the San Jose Sharks, Chicago Blackhawks, the Montreal Canadiens taking it on the chin against the Philadelphia Flyers. It's Hockey Central at Noon, the Fan 590, High Definition and Rogers Sportsnet, as well in Sirius 97. Today, Darren Millard, Mike Brophy, we'll chat with Nick Kypreos, who's following the Eastern Conference final. Troy Murray, Blackhawks radio analyst, will reflect on the Hawks taking out the Sharks in Game 1. And Sam Constantino is the Memorial Cup analyst on Rogers Sportsnet tonight. Windsor against Calgary. But the first hour is all about an in-studio guest. Here's Brad May. Detroit Red Wing, how are you?
I'm doing well. Darren, how are you?
You okay to spend the whole hour with us?
I can spend the whole hour, okay. Yes.
We're going to lean on you. We're going to cover a lot of things. Okay. People want to send the emails in to hockeycentral@fan590.com. Questions for Brad, who's had a long career in the National Hockey League, Stanley Cup champion. So anything that covers his career, I'm opening it up.
Okay.
If that's
all right,
okay.
No problem.
I'll try and filter out any sort of pseudo-suspect emails.
You got it.
Save the crazies for Doug.
Exactly. If the clown from Thunder Bay emails in, we'll take him off. He only gets to talk to Doug. You're assessment of the Final Four, though. You've been championing this Montreal-Canadian thing for a while, and then on the other side, you get one versus two. We'll start with the Eastern Conference, Philly-Montreal.
Philly-Montreal. Obviously, last night, you saw an unbelievable game by the Philadelphia Flyers, but I've picked Montreal all along. They've got depth, obviously defensive depth, that we're able to focus on their big players, Crosby and Malkin, Ovechkin. And I don't know if it's as easy to do against the Philadelphia Flyers. So last night you saw that. But Philly's bigger and probably a little tougher. So I think Montreal has to make some adjustments.
This to me is the dream matchup for Philadelphia. The big, burly, built for the playoffs, antagonist, a greasy, in-your-face team against a smaller club.
Yeah, and of course people wondered, would the fact that the Flyers only had a day, a minimal amount of time between one series and the next, how that was going to affect them. But I thought the interesting thing was that they got right in on top of Halak early in the game. They just crowded him. They didn't give him a chance to make saves. They didn't give him a chance to see the puck. And that affected the way he was able to perform. And I thought they smothered him early.
Philly's playing terrific right now. Battle-tested, obviously. Two teams that went to Game 7. And there was a great stat out there when Detroit, when we were out playing against Phoenix, they said 14 or 15 teams of the last 52 teams that have gone to Game 7 lost Game 1 of the following series. But you had two teams playing Game 7, so they were equal.
Yeah, and it was a rout. Did you see that coming?
I didn't see that coming. I picked Montreal last night. I thought that they'd come off, and obviously riding Halak's tails there. He's been so good in the playoffs, but each series he's been pulled early, and he's always rebounded to find himself and win some games.
Yeah, so I thought that was the smartest thing that Jacques Martin did was yanking him, because it guarantees a winning game too, based on the bounce back theory. He had to yank him at some point.
Yeah, and I mean, to me, there's no question. You go back with Halak. I'm sure in Montreal, where they love to debate goaltenders, there will be debate over the next few hours about who should start.
Really?
To me, I would think the way they are in Montreal, they love to debate this issue. To me, there's no debate at all.
No debate.
Halak's your guy, absolutely.
Montreal is this small, speedy team that can block some shots on the backhand. When you picked them against Washington, when you picked them against Pittsburgh, they were the opportunistic team.
Yeah.
Do you now switch? Do you abandon this bandwagon and go with Philadelphia on a whole?
No, I don't think so. I think there's a reason why it's a 4 out of 7 series and 7 games possibly. So Montreal, I think they have to adjust, obviously, from their first game, but
What are those adjustments? What do you see?
I think the first thing they have to do is get pucks to the net. Michael Layton's been terrific. He's standing on his head. I don't know how many goals he's let in, one or two, since this whole thing started for him. But he came in. He's obviously the number one goaltender in Philadelphia right now. I think it's the same game plan. I think they have to get in front of the net, obviously, just the same way as Philly has to do to Montreal.
How many really tough saves did Layton have to make yesterday?
Not very many.
Right. Most of them came in warm-up.
Right.
His toughest saves.
So we didn't see the Cannellari opportunities. We didn't see the going to the net and creating turnovers like we did against Pittsburgh and Washington.
No. I think what we did see was Pronger. You know,
right.
We saw him all over the ice, and I played with Prongs in Anaheim, and this guy's ready for the playoffs. He's built for the playoffs, and the rest of his team rallied behind a guy like Chris Pronger. He's very effective.
Darren Millard, Mike Brophy, and Brad May in studio on Hockey Central at noon.
I actually wrote about this on sportsnet.ca today, Brad, that Chris Pronger was brought in for a reason in this hockey team, not just because he's won, but because he lives a certain lifestyle. He likes to train. You know that because you played with him. And there was a division in the room between the young guys who didn't appear quite prepared to make the full commitment that you need to make to be a Stanley Cup champion. It looks to me now like they're on the same page. How important was it for the young guys to learn from a guy like Pronger, not just about on ice, but off ice?
Well, Chris off the ice is one guy that goes into a locker room. In Anaheim, he did it where when you're a rookie, you have to act like a rookie. There's a pecking order. There's a watershed on the team. And Chris being the captain is at the top of that. You know, at some days you get tired of it, honestly, as a player. You get frustrated and, you know, you call him out a little bit. But he's unwavering, his whole philosophy. And he's brought in. He's an ass to the young guys, and he's tough on them. But, you know, he also gives them a pat in the back when they do good things. And guys in Anaheim, I can't speak for the guys in Philadelphia, but if they're the same type of guys, which, you know, the physical group, you respond very well. Chris is a great leader. Mm-hmm.
Brad May, a teammate of Chris Pronger's, and won a Stanley Cup together. Is Chris Pronger dirty?
Very dirty. Very dirty. And he does it. There's a method to his madness. A guy, I don't know what's going to happen here in the rest of the series. I like to think that Mike Camilleri is going to you know, go to the net hard, and you got Gionta and Gomez, and they're going to battle with Chris Pronger. But Chris is intimidating, and, you know, he's stopped a lot of players in his career.
And the rules have changed, bro.
Oh, yeah. He's not as menacing as he used to. However, in yesterday's game, he took a couple of penalties early, and it was almost like an investment in the rest of the series. He knows, if I'm going to take penalties, now might be the time, because we can afford the 2 minutes, and I'm going to make guys very aware of what I'm capable of doing. So I thought it was strategic what he did.
Not unlike Brian Marchment when he played. It's a cost of doing business. You know, you're going to be in the penalty box a little bit, but, you know, the next time a guy goes over the blue line or into the corner chasing down a puck and they know Chris is in the area, they might be a little more timid.
93% of the shifts that Mike Camilleri took 5-on-5, Chris Pronger was on the ice.
Amazing.
Now, we'll see how that changes when the series shifts to Montreal. But what can Mike Camilleri do to make himself more effective when Chris Pronger's on the ice? What do you think?
You first?
No, you go ahead. You're the player.
Well, Mike Camilleri, he's so offensive. He's so gifted. He's got great speed, and he's got an awareness in the offensive zone that he can find his teammates and other players. There was a goal he scored in the last series where, you know, he wasn't even following the puck, or certainly it looked that way, and he spun around and got a one-timer. I think it was in Game 7. He can find those open areas and goal-scoring places, but he's just got to be fast, and he's got to stay determined. And, you know, if he scores in the last 2 minutes of a game, 58 minutes into the contest, you know, that could be the one that's going to put them over the top. So he's just got
to
battle.
I wonder, too, if you don't try to goad Pronger into penalties. If you remember back to your Stanley Cup run, he took 2 suspensions in the playoffs.
Yeah, he did.
And, you know, I mean, you would hope he's at a point in his career where he's mature enough to understand when guys are trying to suck him in. But he is an emotional guy.
That emotion, I think, you know, when you're walking on that line, sometimes you go over it. Being his teammate a few years ago in Anaheim, you know, he stepped up, and actually it was 2 guys hit Thomas Holmstrom on the sideboards, Robbie Niedermeyer and Chris. But, you know, when Chris goes at you, he's going there to finish. And honestly, if, you know, you're in the playoffs, and if you're going to hurt the guy, you're going to hurt the guy. But that's not his intention, but his intention is to be as close to that line as possible. And sometimes you go over it. I think you have to live and die with that attitude and behavior that Chris has in the playoffs. But he's got other teammates. I mean, you know, you can neglect or haven't talked about Mike Richards and Scott Hartnell and an enigma, Dan Carcillo. These guys are physical, and they're in-your-face kind of guys.
With Brad May, Stanley Cup champion, a longtime NHL player on Hockey Central at noon, in studio with us for the hour, along with Darren Millard and Mike Brophy. There was a lot of block shots for Montreal the first two series. They didn't seem to be able to hit those pucks or have those pucks hit them yesterday. And that, coupled with the traffic in front, gave Halak all kinds of trouble. Did you see that? Did Philadelphia do anything different?
I think every series has its own personality. Mm-hmm. And Montreal's got to find that personality or that energy for this series. And, you know, they're sitting around today, you know, maybe have a tough practice, or maybe it's a day to, you know, rest up some injured bodies. But, you know, you'll see a different team game two. They just came off an amazing high, knocking off, you know, the second great team that they played in the playoffs. So I think game one, anything can happen. It's what they do going forward.
You talked about teammates of Chris Pronger's and Richards and Gagne and Hartnell and Carcillo, but Mike Camilleri needs to be picked up here at some point. Thomas Plekanec, does he have to do his point totals aren't outrageously brutal, but he hasn't been that front and center guy.
It's interesting. When I watched Thomas Plekanec play, and I've said this all along, because you watch him now and you're always watching him with the notion that he's in a contract year and that he has to negotiate. And again, I like him as a hockey player. I think he's a good player. But when I hear people talking about this guy being a $5 million a year player, I just shake my head. And I mean, not to disparage the guy on any level. He's not a $5 million player. He's not a guy who can lead a hockey team. I think that he's a low-end first-line player or a good second-line player. And now, because most of the great players have been signed to long-term contracts and this guy's available, he might end up winning the lottery. But I don't think he's in Camilleri's league. So he's got to obviously contribute. But I don't see him as a guy who can carry a hockey team.
Go back to round one. I think you got to see Plekanec call out the goaltender, call him out in Philadelphia, because when he did it against Washington, he performed and he had some big games. So maybe he has to put a little more pressure on himself. But you look at, they have Gionta, they have Gomez, Camilleri, Plekanec, mm-hmm. their third line, Travis Moen, who also I played with in Anaheim, Lapierre. These guys, you know, they can get to the net, they can score goals. They just got to get dirty. And game one, it's behind them. Doesn't matter. They could have lost.
People always wonder about that. You know, when you get beat thoroughly in an opening game, how quickly do you put it behind you? Because there's always a debate. People say, I'd rather lose 6-0 than lose 2-1. If you lose 2-1, you lay in bed all night thinking, we could have won that game. You lose 6-0, let's start fresh.
I know it wasn't the same team, but that Brandon club lost 9-3 in their first game of the Memorial Cup, MasterCard Memorial Cup, and won yesterday.
Looked like a completely different team.
So, and that junior ranks professionally. I think that it's lot easier.
How did you put a big loss like that behind you? How quickly?
Well, I think you're right on that. I think if you go and you battle so hard late into the third period, maybe into overtime, you know, maybe even an extra period of overtime, and then you come up short and you lose 2-1 or 3-2, those ones are hard to get over because, as you say, you second guess yourself, you're so close, and you find excuses. The bottom line, Montreal knows they didn't play well enough. They didn't get off to a good start, which couples and leads to the third and fourth goal against. You know, I'm sure Jacques Martin and these guys, Kirk Muller, they're gonna rally that group and they're gonna be ready for game two.
Jeff Carter went out and took a skate today and then left the ice, did about 3 or 4 laps and then went off. So he's looking for medical clearance and sounds like that's on the way. But on the other side, the Montreal Canadiens aren't going to get Andrei Markov back. We know that. And PK Subban seemed to hit, I don't know whether it was his initiation or the realization of where he was, or whatever you want to call it, but yesterday was the first real pitfall, stumble that we've seen from him.
I think this is going to be a true test to his teammates, the other defensemen that he looks up to, Hal Gill, to just pull this guy back into the group. Really, they lost the game, so what? You know, mm-hmm. they have more in front of them. This guy, I hope to think that he's got the fortitude to battle through this and
is
forward,
Philadelphia a different place to play, a more difficult place to play than a Washington, than a Boston?
I think so. Boston's amazing. I played a few playoff series there. Boston's a great place to play, but the Philadelphia fans, they're intimidating. It's the true hockey fan that's sitting on the glass, you know, the first 15 mm-hmm. rows. I mean, those are the loud guys painted up wearing, you know, the Philadelphia orange. And, you know, you go around the league, a lot of times that first 15, 20 rows are the suits and the business people. In Philadelphia, big-time sports, you know, city. And
you can hear the pounding on the glass during the game. You can just hear when you're watching on television, they're so into it. It's got to be not frightening, but you're very aware of their presence.
So there's a conscious effort by veterans to take P.K. Subban and try and bring him back, or you don't just let him be in.
On good teams that are aware of their situation, you know, do it for sure. Like they did, they probably did it 10 minutes, 5 minutes after that game. And, you know, when they went back to their hotel and had their team meal, you know, PK, put it behind you. It's not a big deal. You've got another game to play in 2 days. You know, rest yourself up. You know, we don't know. He could have been banged up, could have been injured. But the bottom line is he was running it, you know, at a high level and playing a lot of minutes, leading their team in minutes the last series. And you're bound to have a game that's a tough one.
It was his welcome to the NHL moment, really, because he steps into the league. And I've said before, there was like a seamless entry from the American League into the NHL. He's got a swagger about his game. He knows he belongs. There's no question. I mean, he knows he's in the NHL to stay now. But yesterday, you could see the look in his eyes like, wow, is this game ever fast?
Well, he outdueled a Norris Trophy finalist in Mike Green, went up against Zdeno Chara, and or watched Zdeno Chara lose, and now he's up against Chris Pronger. So
I think P.K. Subban, from everything I've heard about him, a good friend of mine owns the Montreal Canadiens and the Hamilton Bulldogs, and they love P.K. So he's a guy that he's got nothing to fear because he's loving his life. He's a hockey player. He's enjoying it. But I got a great saying that has always been said to me is adversity builds character, but hopefully in his case it reveals it.
With Brad May in studio for this hour of Hockey Central, and again, email us at hockeycentral@fan590.com. A couple coming in, one from Tinelli that we'll get to after the break, and this one, I have a signed Brad May card from his days playing with the Niagara Falls Thunder. Mark's got the one that you don't have. Any idea how much the card's worth? Mark wants to know.
I got to think about 45 cents. Could be more than that, actually, because there's not that many out there anymore, maybe.
You might be able to get that Coke or something for it, Mark. Again, email us. A lot of questions coming in for Brad May. We'll switch over to the Western Conference as well. The San Jose Sharks lose the opener. Chicago Blackhawks finally win a game one, and they have home ice advantage. And we'll reflect a little bit with Brad May as the hour continues on the Fan 590 in high definition on Rogers Sportsnet.
Hockey Central at noon on Toronto Sports Radio, the Fan 590, Rogers Sportsnet, and Sirius Channel 97.
Great response from the emailers on Hockey Central at noon. Hockey Central at fan590.com invited you to pick Brad May's brain or just send in reflections of his career, memories. I'm a big fan of this one. Darren Millard, Mike Brophy, by the way, in Hockey Central. Brad May's in studio for this opening hour. Welcome back from the fresh air, Jeff Taylor says, referring to being in Manitoba last week. Question for Brad May. Would you ever consider playing for Chicago? Even if it meant taking a pay cut. Hopefully, no pay cut, it says in brackets. That's Jeff from Rivers, Manitoba.
Well, I guess right now I would think that I'd play anywhere if I was offered a good contract. And for me to take less, I'm already at the league minimum. So I don't think that could happen, Jeff. So, but no, Chicago, look at the team that they've assembled there. Pretty exciting place to play in a great city. So Chicago is one of my favorite cities in the league.
And there's some people who would suggest they could use his type of leadership too, so... That's interesting.
You'd fit in on that Chicago lineup right now with Eager and Burrish and
worth more than the league minimum.
Absolutely. You know, I'd double your pay.
I'd love it, Darren.
I'd give you twice the league
minimum. You can be my agent.
Brad says, this is from Tony, just wanted to say that even though it was for a short time, you're a great Leaf in my mind, great veteran player with good influence on the younger guys and always stood up for the team. One question for you, and we always get this when we get guys like you in the studio. Who's the toughest guy you ever fought? That's from Tinelli in Toronto.
I would say it's a hands down toughest guy I've fought is Derek Bougard. Probably the most intimidating few days leading into a fight that I had to have with Derek Bougard.
You had to have that fight?
I had to have it. There's a history to it. We were in the playoffs 07. I got suspended for 3 games. It was in game 4.
This was the Anaheim year.
And I don't apologize for it, but I made a mistake. I went over the edge. You know, when I was talking about, walking that line, late in the game, one of their players started a fight with Sean Thornton and Kent Huskins. I turn around waiting for the next guy to come into the pile, and about 150 feet down the ice, Kim Johnson, who's their best player or best defenseman, you know, came straight at me, and I thought he was coming in for a fight because that's exactly what was happening, and I hit him. Anyways, I got suspended. I knocked Kim Johnson out at that time. He didn't play the next game. Nobody wants to take somebody else's opportunity away from them playing in the playoffs, but I hurt him, and for about 5 months, I knew myself, just the accountability, the integrity there that, you know, they have the toughest player in the league, and that's a guy that I have to fight or stand up to, you know, to redeem myself and my character. So I knew I had to fight him. It was about 3 or 4 days leading into this game, from a Wednesday game to a Sunday, and probably the worst 3 days of my life.
And Bugar's the type of guy who will skate around during warm-up and remind you that he's coming. I mean, this guy just yaps all the time.
He's, you know what, in my case, he didn't say a word, which was even more intimidating. So at the time, he was a duck killer. He had fought Todd Fedoruk, another guy, Trevor Gillies.
Caved Fedoruk's face in.
Not only did he break bones, you know, he hurt these guys, put them to sleep, and you needed the trainer with smelling salts to come out and get you. So I had 3 days where I couldn't sleep. I was watching YouTube and all the fights, and you know, trying to get myself going.
Were you watching your fights or Bugard's fights?
Everyone's. Yeah. I was trying to get into that zone, and my wife actually made a real funny joke. She said that she had the perfect song for me. It was a Sunday afternoon game. She said, you know, and she started playing U2, Sunday Bloody Sunday, and I thought that was brutal.
Scared, at least she gets into the spirit of it.
Oh, yeah, no, because I was a miserable guy. To and
how did the fight? How was the fight?
It ended up being fine for me,
early in the game?
It was about 10 minutes in. He was on a shift. Actually, just before then, and knocked Todd Bertuzzi out with a hit. Todd had his head down after making a pass, and Bugard came down, and he was ready for the challenge and this moment too, because that was the first time Minnesota played Anaheim after losing. So he hurt Bert, so Bert was out for about 5 or 6 minutes, and then just that, it was like an eerie feeling before it all started the next shift, and of course Randy Carlyle put George Parros and I out on the ice. So.
And do you tell George he's mine?
I did, but then, you know, you can't take, I mean, that's George's job as well, and he was ready for it too. Bugard at the time, I mean, scariest guy in the league on
the ice.
It's
like the CN Tower.
Oh, he's huge. He's huge.
When you watched his fights, did you come up with a strategy?
I did. And I, you know, if you ever watched the fight, my whole thing was, he's, at the time, he's big, big right-hand guy, big bombs, and so if I could take half his body away and stand appropriately, you know, he's not going to hit you. And sometimes you got to go in defensive.
Yeah.
I'm really defensive.
How'd you do?
I held on for dear life. But no, I did all right. It was good. But I'll tell you what, he's, it was a good fight. There's no question. A tie against Derek Bugard's a win.
He's 6'7". How tall are you?
I've been lying for years. I'm actually 6 feet. I've been saying I'm 6'1". I did that for the Central Scouting in 1988.
Oh, and you didn't want to change.
Well, it's interesting the strategy the fighters will have, because I remember a Thursday night in Peterborough when Ty, as a junior, lost a fight to Troy Crowder, and there was this very similar height difference. Ty was, what, 5'8"? And Crowder was like 6'4", 6'5", and he lost the fight. He threw as many punches, but because Crowder held him out, his punches were coming up about 8 inches short, and he said to me, watch what I do the next game. He said, I'll get in tight, and I'll throw uppercuts. It was a different fight. I mean, he knew exactly, as a smaller man, what he had to do.
I've heard this saying too, everyone has a plan going into a fight until you get hit. So
all bets are off.
You go, yeah, exactly. You go in and then instinct takes over. But Ty was a tough guy. He had a huge head though.
Oh, it, well, hard as granite.
He had to wear like that Cooper XL7 Ty did.
Remember those things? The flaps on the side? With Brad May in studio on Hockey Central at noon with Darren Millard and Mike Brophy, some emails coming in. What was Joe Sakic like? That's from Jake in Fredericton.
Joe Sakic, one of the best teammates I've ever had. What a leader. This guy, not only is he a winner and he's won Stanley Cups, but just a wonderful family guy. Got a great, great wife. He's got wonderful family, young children. Actually, when I got to Colorado, our sons played on the same hockey team, and our daughters played together. So, just a great guy, a great friend. He's a better man than he is a hockey player, which is tough to do.
He is a great guy, and I know when I worked at the Hockey News, we always used to joke like we'd like to write stories about Joe, but he never said anything. Yeah. He was so quiet. Was there ever a point in the locker room where he got funny or he got vocal, because he just strikes me as such a quiet dude.
Oh, no, Joe's got a great sense of humor. Very funny in the locker room and very witty, but he never really, never yelled. He never snapped in the locker room, but when he did talk, it had meaning. And you know, everybody, the moment Joe, you know, addressed the group, everybody would stop what they were doing and pay attention.
You just went through the playoffs with the Detroit Red Wings and managed to get by Phoenix in the first round in 7 games, went straight to San Jose, and ended up losing that one in 5. What do you see from the San Jose-Chicago series as we lean on Brad May in studio on this hour on the Fan 590 and Rogers Sportsnet?
Well, watching the first game, playing against Chicago all year, so taking it to the Chicago side, playing against Chicago, they're so deep in offensive talent. They can get scoring from every line. Even their grinders, tough guys, you know, can be offensive. So I think San Jose's no different than playing Detroit. San Jose's got to really play, a tighter defensive style, kind of stay in the neutral zone, in the middle, deflecting everything wide. The only problem is Chicago's fast. You know, you got Hossa, mm-hmm. you got Burrish, obviously, Taze and Kane. These guys can fly. So I don't know what you can do to stop them. They're going to score goals. I just think you have to really play a tight system in your defensive zone.
Were you guys surprised? 45-40 were the shots yesterday in a regulation game. 85 total shots in that game, bro.
Yeah, I was very surprised, to be quite honest with you. And I didn't think the San Jose Sharks capitalized on their opportunities. The Thornton-Marlowe-Heatley line, they had a lot of chances. They could have easily won that hockey game. And that's why I still think they've got a good chance in the series. Now, the one question people ask is, can those guys raise the level of their play to the level they need to be champions? I mean, we all know they're great regular season players. Do they have what it takes to do it in the playoffs?
Rose, very anti-Joe Thornton, by the way.
Okay, well, with that being said, they already have. They already have to get them to this point. Marlowe, Thornton, and Heatley were great against us. The last game, obviously, Marlowe scores the winning goal. That's a big moment. I think that the experience with Team Canada, winning the gold medal, learning from all these other guys that have won championships, to win that stage, even Dan Boyle in that group with Danny Heatley, they put themselves in that next category already. So I don't think anybody that's questioned Joe Thornton in the past, I think they can stop talking about it. I think he's silenced, or certainly helped me believe in Joe Thornton. But I believe in that team. They've been the best team in the West for 2 years, and maybe in one of the best teams for the last 5 years in the West. So they have a great group there. It's just they're coming in against beating us, I think, was a big confidence boost.
Yeah. Give them credibility.
But it doesn't stop there. The Chicago Blackhawks are a great hockey team. I pick Chicago. I think Chicago's going to win, and of course they got off to a good start. But, you got Duncan Keith and Brent Seabrook, Brent Sopel, solid defense. So it's going to take the big four in San Jose to win that series.
I think it's going to be a great series, and it's going to be a long series.
I was surprised at how ineffective that Thornton-Heatley combination was yesterday, given that they had home ice advantage. I mean, I just, with last change, everything going on, and then they ended up being on the ice for the winning goal against. I don't know how closely you paid attention to it, but Heatley just seemed to get stuck off that faceoff. Didn't know whether to go behind the net for the boards or out to the point guy, and Rob Blake wasn't able to get there. So I'm curious to see what Todd McClellan does with his adjustments.
The guys in Detroit, Todd was the assistant coach there a couple years ago. The guys love him. They think so highly of Todd McClellan. And if you were talking to my teammates, they say that Todd would have them completely ready for Game 2. And in the same case as the Philadelphia-Montreal series, it's Game 1. That's a tougher game to lose because it was 3-2, but it doesn't matter. Game 1's gone. They have to win Game 2. And I don't know what the number is exactly, but it's definitely more teams are winning on the road this year than in past years.
Can you explain that?
That is crazy this year.
Salary cap parity, it's finally settled in.
Well, salary cap parity, I think it's coaching. I think it's preparing teams, you know, or your team to play on the road all year. Face-off plays, like you mentioned about Heatley and that line being on the ice against on the goal, on Bafuglin's goal. you never know. San Jose might have been running a different play off that faceoff and expected to win or maybe played a little differently. So Todd McClellan will make adjustments and look to San Jose to win the faceoff battle. They got great guys, Scotty Nickel, Manny Malhotra, two of the best in the league.
We'll get through as many emails as we can in the next segment. A couple right now. Hey, Brad, been a Sabres fan since 76. In 93, my wife and I hit a rough patch in our marriage. After being apart for a week, we tried getting back together and doing something that we really enjoyed, and that was going to a Sabres playoff game. Happened to be game four against the Bruins and your goal, and we've been back together ever since, and we'll celebrate our 26th anniversary on May 26th. An endless thank you to Brad May.
We've got Dr. Phil here now.
That's unbelievable. It's too bad that their anniversary is not May 27th because I was wearing number 27 at the time. That would have been really crazy. I just got goosebumps. Good for you. Congratulations.
Cool. Huge Leafs fan. Big question. The Leafs have been in building mode right now. They don't have any 1A stars up front. Can they win? Can they compete that way?
Can they compete that way? I think there's no question they can compete that way. When you don't have like the top-end talent, you have to become a better team. So can the Toronto Maple Leafs do that? I believe so. They have great young talent. They have guys that are going to step in. I don't know how many naysayers are around here, but I believe in Toronto. I actually thought they were going to be a lot better than they were this year. I know a lot of those guys playing with them last year, and they've obviously had a huge turnover. But I believe in Brian Burke and Dave Nonis and Dave Poulin. They're going to put together a great team. And Leaf fans, just be patient. Just be patient.
67, baby. Pat wants to know from Quick Fix Consulting, last one before the break. Does Brad have the Mayday call from Rick Jeanneret on his cell phone ringtone?
I don't, but I've thought about it. I tried to do it, but I think I was in the United States at the time and they didn't have it or whatever, something about that. But I think my son has it on his.
That's pretty cool. Brad May in studio with us on Hockey Central at noon. Email us, hockeycentral@fan590.com. One more segment with the Stanley Cup champion with Darren Millard, Mike Brophy, Fan 590, and Rogers Sportsnet.
Hockey Central on Toronto Sports Radio, the Fan 590, Rogers Sportsnet, and Sirius Channel 97.
Millard and Brophy in the Hockey Central Studios, Fan 590, Rogers Sportsnet. Nice to be in studio with Brad May, Stanley Cup champion. So you're with Detroit. You guys lose to the San Jose Sharks. I'm just curious how this breaks down. After the last game, you got your exit interviews, what, the next day?
Yes.
2 days?
2 days later.
Okay, what have you been doing since?
I packed up my apartment, loaded it into a U-Haul, drove back to Toronto as soon as I could. I haven't been with my family, my kids, all winter. So they miss me for sure, but I know exactly what I don't want anymore. This experiment and experience, it was unbelievable for me to go to Detroit and play for that organization and all those great guys. I had such an amazing year. I really did. But I miss my kids and my wife, and it was nice to come home.
So are you going to play next year?
I'm not sure. You know, if I was offered a contract and it was going to be, you know, everything all set up to be perfect for me and my family. But I think number one is my wife and my children. Mm-hmm. They're comfortable here in Toronto. They're in school, and we have to have a family, you know, get together.
Oh, conference.
And conference. I don't know if you have those, but they get pretty intense.
I get invited to them sometimes.
They get pretty intense in the May house.
Then I get told that I'm going to wait for the conference on the couch, but I'm not sure when that conference is going to begin. But yeah, it may be the next night. It may
we'll
be the
let you
next
know the
night.
Results.
Yeah,
oh,
but
really?
But I'm supposed to wait on the couch until the conference starts.
Wow,
I've been involved in those. Brad, emails coming in from Brian says I didn't realize you were so soft spoken and well spoken. Keep it up, great insights. Hey, Brad, do you remember when you were a Canuck, and what was that like to play in that hockey environment?
Vancouver was a great place to play. I played there two separate times. 2.5 years from 98 to 2000, I got traded back for at the deadline for a year and a half, and then we had the lockout. So I absolutely love Vancouver. I remember everything about my experience there except for the night I got knocked out by Matt Sundin. I don't remember. Probably the next day.
Well, we know that wasn't in a fight.
The next day and a half, I was a mess. I woke up in a CAT scan machine after being hit by him. So I don't remember those 2 days, but the rest of it, I had a great experience.
You had some run-ins with Kevin Kerr in Windsor. Was he the yappiest guy you ever played against? And doesn't say a name. It's Lauren.
Down in Windsor, I remember playing, first of all, there was a guy that played on that team that was pretty intimidating, Jim Revenberg, played for the Spits at that time. So he was the guy, and then they had, trying to think of another guy, and he beat up a teammate of mine, and it was pretty scary. Literally, he had this guy down. Back then, you used to have 5-on-5 brawls,
right?
You know, where, and you know, even if the 6th and 7th player came on the ice in a change, so you'd have 6 or 7 guys fighting at once, and pretty crazy, little scary at times. But I played on a team in Niagara Falls that, you know, probably had half the tough guys in the OHL at the time.
Bill LaForge was your coach.
Bill LaForge was my coach,
and
yes.
A buddy of mine, Heavy Evison, was your assistant coach. Yeah. And Heavy liked the rumble tumble.
Yes, and Heavy, true to his name, was Heavy.
Yep.
But he legally changed his name to Heavy.
He did, yeah. And
what
his
about
brother,
Ron Coleman? Was Ron Coleman one of the assistants, or was that from the Hamilton days?
No, he was in Hamilton. Ron was. Bill LaForge had a couple guys within his circle. Ron Coleman, Dan Cameron from Toronto here went down and helped Bill out. Ron Bernstein from Hamilton as well would help Bill out occasionally. So Bill LaForge was one of the greatest guys I've ever been around in hockey. He's not around today, so... you know, to you, Bill. He was a great guy.
Justin emails in, I know in the past, Brad, you've commented on your respect for Rick Rippon and his fights. Have you tried to fight him yet? I think it'd be a wicked scrap.
I fought Rick Rippon early last season. I just had an eye injury, actually, in Calgary about a week and a half before, so I was wearing a visor. And what I like about Rick Rippon, or in this case, when I talk about him, he wanted to fight. So he you know, we kind of... saw each other and, you know, warm up as we were skating around. But our first shift, he was like, you know, hey, Brad, you know, let's get this done with, whatever he said. But he was willing to take his helmet off and his face shield off as well. I had a visor on. He's so excitable. This guy loves fighting, and he's really good at it. And, you know, you sit back and you watch all his fights. I think pound for pound, he's probably the toughest guy in the NHL today. I'm very comfortable and confident that I could fight him again and have a real fun one, but he's tough.
Now, was that the fight you had the visor on, and was that the fight where you said, look, we'll do it in the next period?
No, that was against Chris Bartsch. That was okay. There was about 2 weeks there that after I hurt my eye, I had to wear a visor. And then when the one thing I'd say about Rick Rippon, never take your helmet off again for anybody that's wearing a visor. You know, why would you ever disengage your airbag knowing that you're going to be in a car crash?
Right.
It makes no sense. So I think the one thing with visors, that whole penalty rule has to change. I think if it's spontaneous and a fight happens and one guy has a visor and one guy doesn't, that's, you know, so be it. But the idea that somebody would take away some protection to be in a fight, to protect their hands and not their head, makes no sense to me.
For those that don't know, the Bartsch fight, Brad, you were wearing a visor in the first period.
Yes.
You told Bartsch you'd fight him in the second period.
Plus, it gave me an extra 20 minutes to get ready for it.
So you went to the dressing room and took your visor off.
I think I had 2 shifts that period. I was tired, so I needed a rest.
Ed came back out without the visor,
yeah,
and fought him, so you were able to keep your helmet on.
Yes. Well, at the time, I probably did something that I shouldn't have done. Obviously, I'm wearing a visor at the time because the doctors, you know, made it mandatory. I didn't ask the doctors in Detroit at the time, you know, if should I take it off. It was just a decision I made, which, you know, was almost a slap in the face to the doctors who, you know, tell you to do that because they're trying to protect you. Meanwhile, my mindset had changed. I knew I was going to be going into a fight against Bartsch, and just the way the game was, the energy and the environment that night, you know, that's what happened. But
can you imagine, bro, if you're sitting in the room and you're in an NHL room and you go, anybody have a Phillips? You got to take this visor off.
You know, it's funny too, talk about fighting. I mean, there's the age old debate. Should fighting stay in hockey? I've always been on the side that there's a place in hockey for fighting. But one of the greatest myths of all time, people say, nobody gets hurt in a fight. We know that's not true. I mean, if you fight for a living, yeah, which you did, there's a lot of risk involved.
Oh, there's no question there's risk involved. And not only to your hands, but of course, you know, multiple injuries to your face and you know, dislocated shoulders. I've had 4 surgeries in my career on my shoulders, and they all happened from fights. But you know what? I would never change any of those moments. You know, even the guys, 2 of them were in exhibition, 2 guys I probably should never have fought. I shouldn't. At the time, you know, I had played many years, and I shouldn't have been the guy.
Don't give a young guy a chance.
But you know what? That's how I got my chance. Is I when I came in and I was trying to show my team in Buffalo, you know, what I was made of. You know, all comers. You know, you mm-hmm. wanted you were challenging everybody, and you just wanted to show your team and your teammates how tough you were, and how committed you were. More than being tough, how committed you were to the team.
Who was the veteran you went after? I know Ty talks about Dave Brown as the guy that he wanted to fight. Who was there a specific veteran?
You know what? Early in exhibition, there was a few different guys that I got in fights with. Daryl Shannon, actually, I fought. He was with Toronto at the time. But the one guy that I got into it with was Shane Corson, 3 or 4 games into my career. And that was probably the toughest fight I've ever had. And it was really good. It was fun.
One final email. Sorry we couldn't get to them all. I played junior with Brad in Niagara Falls. I was an overage goalie. He was a rookie who fought every tough guy in the league and won. Great guy, great teammate and a friend, and he's proving once again that he's a class act. Keep up the good work, Maisie, and there is still lots of game left in you, buddy. And that's from Mike. Mike Frizzetti?
No way. Rizzo. Yeah. What a great guy Mike is. You watched the series, Mike Rosati. We were just talking about it.
Hey,
Mike Rosati was unbelievable.
Thanks for coming in today.
He put on the spider web in London. It was unreal. Oh, yeah, it was great.